people and researchers from at least around the country. I don't know how many global folks visit our core facility, but Ken will address that later in our tour of our core facility. This is Jeff Erb. He's our IT guy. This is Lisa. She's recently been hired to help us get a lot of our metadata and core information into a database format such that we can actually start utilizing it to its maximum potential. This is Ken Campbell. He's the head of our drilling ops and our core facility, and he'll be leading our tour later today. And this is Bruce Cohen. She's a geologist. She actually is one of our drillers and helps to add to our core collection. And my name is Harley Means. I'm a geologist with the survey. And kind of shifting gears a little bit here, I'd like to maybe kind of orient you with respect to the local geology. I know yesterday you went out and took the jungle boat cruise and saw some of our neat critters, but believe it or not, Florida has some actually pretty spectacular geology. So I'd like to introduce you to a little bit of that today. Well, we're sitting here at one of the world's premier springs. This spring behind us, Wakulla Spring, is probably the result of a giant sinkhole collapse, and as sea level and water tables have fluctuated, it is now a spring because water is discharging from it, but at points in the past when sea levels and water tables have been lower, it's probably functioned either as a swellette or just a sinkhole that's got water in it. We see many of those all around the state. A swellette is just a sinkhole that takes surface water, and we have a lot of those here, and they're actually relevant to Wakulla Springs, and I'll talk a little more about that in just a minute. You may or may not know that Florida has an abundance of springs. We have at least 720 known springs in the state, and probably a lot more than that. If we were to actually try to count every little orifice that water leaked out of in Florida, we'd have jillions of them. So we don't do that. But here's a map that just generally shows you the outline of where springs occur in Florida. And for those of you that don't know where we are, we're situated right about here. This is Wakulla County. This is Leon County. Tallahassee is up here in Leon County. Many of you flew into the Tallahassee Airport just south of town and you were driven down here. Well, why do these springs occur in this particular region of Florida? This is a map showing the distribution of our first magnitude springs. Florida has more first magnitude springs, which are the largest springs. They discharge in excess of 100 cubic feet per second, which is about 65 million gallons of water a day, at least. Some of them significantly more than that. And as you can see, the distribution of them here is almost perfectly coincident with our karst regions. And that makes a lot of sense. Where there's limestone either at or near the surface, we have an abundance of karst features. Springs are karst features. Here's a digital elevation model, which is kind of a joke in Florida. We do have a little bit of topography in the state, but really the reason I wanted to bring this to your attention is because we're situated right down here in this coastal region. Wakulla County is right here, but you can see there's a clear topographic break right here. Today we will traverse this topographic break, and this is known as the Cody Escarpment. And what this is it's a wave-cut escarpment from probably a Pleistocene high stand. And all of the sediments that exist up here, which form what we call the Tallahassee Clay Hills region, this caps the limestone up here. It's all been eroded away. And limestone is almost at or near the surface right here where we are. In fact, if you walk down to the spring, you can actually see a limestone ledge out there in the spring if the water's not too nasty. So here's a little closer shot. Here's Tallahassee. And once again, here's this wave-cut escarpment feature here that we call the Cody Escarpment. And you can see down here we have relatively flat topography. And here we have Wakulla Springs. And later after we eat, we're going to drive up here to Woodville, and we're going to drive all the way out here, and we're going to show you this area. This is another area where prolific amounts of groundwater discharge at springs. But it turns out that the water actually comes down from Wakulla, and it drains from up here in the Northern Highlands, comes down and it disappears into a swellette, goes underground for about 7/10 of a mile, and reemerges as a big river called the St. Marks River. But during the time from which, or during the area under which it disappears here and reemerges, it picks up about 2 to 3 times the amount of flow, and it's simply from groundwater. The interesting thing about this historically is that, and Dr. Wise will tell you a little more about the history of this, but there was an incursion of northern troops that came through here and tried to make it to Tallahassee. And they were stopped here because this area, being a natural bridge, was one of the few areas they could cross over the St. Marks River in their quest to get to Tallahassee. And it turns out that the battle there was important because it kept northern troops from coming in and burning our capital. And we're the only capital in the South that wasn't burned. So, a little bit about the stratigraphy that we'll see here. Here's Wacol Spring right here. This dotted line that you see right here represents what we call a spring shed. And this spring shed delineates the groundwater and surface waters that when they enter the ground, they flow and they actually emerge at Wacolla Spring. So this is really the recharge area for the spring. You see it's actually quite a large area, and actually it really goes up into Georgia quite a bit. Up here above the Cody Escarpment, we have clayey sands and clays of Miocene to Pliocene age, which actually act to protect our aquifer a little bit. Where you have some clay sitting on top of the limestone, what you do on the surface doesn't immediately infiltrate and get into our aquifer. But as soon as you drop over this Cody Escarpment here, you've got limestone added near the surface. So most of the people living in this basin down here are on septic tanks. These septic tanks are sitting right on top of the limestone. And as you walk down and take a peek at our green spring, that spring, I was born and raised here. When I was a boy and swam in the spring, it was a deep blue color and it was crystal clear, and you could see all the way to the bottom, some 130 feet, to the bottom of Wacol Springs. So we're seeing a lot of negative impacts from people living in this area. And I'm sure everyone in this room, everyone in this room, I'm sure, is seeing impacts. We're near the surface here. We have limestone units of the St. Marks Formation, which are early Miocene in age. And then over here we transition into some late Oligocene sediments of the Suwannee Limestone. The reason is because we have a big embayment here. The Apalachicola River flows down through this embayment, and these sediments actually start dipping down. So you get clays and clayey sediments sitting on top of the limestone. Actually, the limestone dives down over here. So we are on the Woodville Karst Plain. What kinds of karst features can we expect to see in this area? We have a number of karst lakes. Already talked about Swalettes a little bit. We have a number of those. Sinkholes, shallow depressions, caves, conduits. We'll talk a little bit more about these conduits. Turns out that you guys are looking at the end pipe of a mapped cave system that extends some 28 miles up into the basin. And it is now the longest mapped underwater cave system in North America. In the Yucatan, they have some longer mapped cave passages. But there's actually a connected cave line, 28 miles, extending all the way out into the Woodville Karst Plain. Pretty interesting. Some crazy people doing that. But as geologists, we appreciate their work, certainly. The karst lakes in our area exist mostly north of us, north of Tallahassee, and they function as basins when water tables are high enough to support these. These are perched lakes, but we've been experiencing a fairly severe drought here in Florida over about the last 10 years, and we lost one of our 4,000-acre lakes through a sinkhole. And in fact, these lakes are there because of coalescing sinkholes, but as the water table fluctuates, these plugs can blow out of sinkholes in the bottoms of these lakes, and we can lose that enormous amount of water and imagine where it ultimately ends up. This exists within the Wacol Spring Shed. And we have several other large ones that function the same way. And about every 25 years, we see this. These lakes will draw down naturally, and it actually helps the ecology of these lakes.
And when that was completely dry, you went in there, didn't you?
Yeah, I'll show you. Stealing my thunder. And here's Tallahassee, and this is just a topographic sheet showing you where these large lakes. Here's Lake Jackson. This is the one that I just showed you as a dry lake basin. The sinkholes are in it. Lake Iamonia is another nice size one. It too fluctuates. And Lake Miccosukee, actually, you can see it's been artificially dammed here, but there is a drain and a swallet through which it drains on a regular basis. So all of these lakes communicate with the underlying aquifer system. And for those of you that don't know, in Florida, we live on top of one of the most prolific aquifer systems in the world. It's called the Floridan Aquifer System. It actually extends all the way up into South Carolina, parts of Georgia, and then over a little west of us into Alabama, and it underlies the entire state of Florida. 90% of Floridians get their drinking water out of some groundwater source. So you can understand how important our aquifers are to us. Here's a little graphic that depicts, as Dr. Wise said, here we are. Here's the hole through which Lake Jackson drained. And it turns out we were actually able to put some ladders and climb down in here and actually map the under lake cave passage down there. Pretty interesting. Here's what the crust feature itself looks like. It's about 6 feet across here. Can you imagine that? A 4,000 acre lake disappearing through a little orifice like that. Here's what it looks like more or less today. There's a little more water in it today, but this is the actual karst basin right here. I talked a little bit about swalettes earlier. Swalettes are incredibly important for the main reason that they supply water to our aquifer system, but oftentimes they supply polluted water to our aquifer system. So runoff goes through the surface streams and into swalettes, and this blue line, once again, is the line that represents the spring shed for Wakulla. So when we have a storm event, all of these swalettes start pumping with surface runoff. They go immediately into the aquifer system, and at some point, they reemerge at Wakulla Spring. And here's a good example of one. Here is southern Tallahassee here. All of our stormwater in southern Tallahassee is channeled through this thing called Munson Slough. It comes into Lake Munson here. Then it overflows and comes down through this into 8 Mile Pond. And then right underneath the road here, all of that untreated stormwater goes right into a hole. That hole we put dye into, and lo and behold, where do you think the dye came out? Right behind me here. And here is actually a picture of Ames Sink, is what we call it. Fisher Creek Drain is another swalette feature that takes surface water, but this one actually takes relatively clean water. Just to the west of us, we have about a 500,000 acre national forest. So luckily we're buffered to the west, and all that water that's draining off of those clays a little west of us, it's tannic, it's dark water, but it's relatively clean. So it disappears through a number of swalettes to the west of us. We have numerous sinkholes and caves. Here's Wakulla Spring where we are. Here are the mapped cave passages. Actually, this map has been extended now. And here are all the sinkholes that actually penetrate into the cave system. And this is how divers have actually managed to link up all these. They didn't just get in at Wakulla and swim 28 miles up here. We had a number of sinkholes that they could actually get into and make these linkages. And you have to take into consideration, too, the bottom of the cave here is about 180 feet deep. Much of the Wakulla cave system is extremely deep, so these cave divers not only have to deal with longevity, but they also have to deal with depth. And some of the technology that was invented here for them to penetrate and map out this cave system is some of the cutting-edge technology in diving. Rebreathers and all kinds of unique mixed gases help them decompress. Church Sink, I wish we had time to take you guys to this one. This is up close to the Cody Escarpment near Tallahassee. I've taken you there, have I not, Dr. Wise? I'm sure you've seen it. It's right next to the Korean Baptist Church there. So we have a number of these open karst features. We can actually see this is the potentiometric surface on the Florida and aquifer here. You can see it's kind of nice blue clean water. There used to be a big giant drainage pipe that funneled all the runoff from the adjacent road right into this thing. So in Florida, our karst features are oftentimes what we call go-away holes, and unfortunately we're now paying the price for a lot of that.
SAP.
So I'll actually turn it to be our problem now.
That might not be someone else's problem.
But these are just some pictures showing you what some of these karst features look like, and I apologize. It's a combination of the light in here and the projector don't make these look as nice as they really are. This is a really spectacular, really big cover collapse sinkhole that is located a little to the west of us here. And if we had time, I'd love to hike you out into the National Forest. We have actually a geological trail that goes through, and a number of these karst features are evident along the trail, this being one of the most spectacular of them. These little karst depressions, it turns out, are incredibly important for the local flora and fauna. There are endangered species that come down and breed in these things, and this is the only part of the world where some of these creatures exist, namely some amphibians. Here's another one. We actually have some air caves in the area. We're not blessed with as many air caves as other parts of Florida. Down in central Florida, around Brooksville, We have an elevated ridge there that's full of caves, and they're out in the Mariana area, a little west of here. We all have
the
caves.
Can you explain the origin of the name of this?
Go. You know what? I can't. Do you know it?
That's a question I put to your
opinion. Did you? he didn't disseminate that information to his son.
We have a tortoise here called the golden tortoise. It's shaped kind of this way. So that's where that name came from. And this is in an area where I send my classes to, self-guided 3 mile tour over in Lenox Saint State Park. And I asked them, how did this get the name? There's a few of them figured this out. But it's named after the Gopher tortoise, whose hole looks like that, which is our native tortoise.
I'm sorry, I don't have a scale for you here, but this is probably about 6 feet from here to here. You can see water back in here. Sometimes you can see blind cave animals. We have a number of endemic cave critters that live in these things, blind cave crayfish, and actually salamander. As a brief in a test, she sucked them up our wells before. Well, like I alluded to earlier, here is the mapped cave passage that actually was brought down and ultimately connected to Wakulla Spring. And you can see here that there's sort of dendritic pattern here. These cave systems extend to further to the south. There's another spring system down here called Spring Creek, which we believe the system is connected to. So divers will continue to push this cave passage as far as they can when conditions are appropriate.
That link from Leon Sinks area and Wakulla was made fairly recently.
It was.
Is that the feature of
right.
the movie?
Tonight, when we get back from our field trip, I'll show you a little video and it'll show you just how enormous some of these underwater cave passages are. You can put, you know, multi-story buildings down here in these caves. So these guys are swimming through with beautiful lights. They do some fabulous photography. So you get to see what they do and them actually making that link. It's pretty historic. And here's just a cutaway showing you. Here we are in the lodge here. Here is the actual spring. And the cave passage, the main cave passage, actually goes right underneath the lodge. So we're sitting on it. And I don't know if you noticed when we pulled up out here in the parking lot, there's a wellhead. That well actually penetrates into the cave system here, where we can pull water quality samples at any time we want to. And there's a number of those around the area. And you can see here that actually the Florida Geological Survey were some of the first folks to ever dive into here, and we recovered bone material from extinct Pleistocene megafaunal animals out here. We got some great old landslides from the 1930s of a guy in a diving bell, and there's a guy up there with a pump, and he's pumping the air for the poor guy that's down there in the diving bell retrieving his massive mastodon bones. And in fact, the mastodon that was recovered from here by the FGS is in one of the museums here in Tallahassee. So if you ever get a chance to come back, I encourage you to visit that. But anyway, as I said, this is probably about 180 feet deep back in here at the mouth of the cave. And you can see the stratigraphy that's exposure. This is that early Miocene St. Mark's formation, which is a limestone. It's kind of the sandy limestone and the Swanee limestone here, which is late Oligocene. And just another kind of a cutaway showing you the complicated tunnel system that exists here under our feet. Here's the vent, as I just showed you. Here's the lodge. Here's the cave system. And it actually branches out, and we have a number of tunnels that coalesce right here and discharge water here at the spring. But in the interest of figuring out where the nutrients were coming from that are fouling our spring, we installed a number of wells into each one of these tunnels so we can sample the water quality of each of them and figure out, you know, where it's coming from and what the water chemistry is at any given time. We also can tell how much flow is coming through each of them. This is what it looks like as they're headed down to do a dive. They actually submerge this bell right here, and divers can swim up underneath this bell and get out and decompress for many, many hours. So they can do an 8 to 10 hour dive, and they have to turn around and do an additional 8 hours worth of deco. Kind of some neat shots just showing you how monstrous this cave is. And here's an aerial shot showing you, look how dark the water is. This is actually a natural event. When we get a large rain event, all of that water that runs into the swales is tannic, and it ultimately makes its way to Wakulla and discharges a big slug of tannic water. I touched a little bit on this issue. Nitrate contamination of our springs in Florida is a huge issue. Naturally occurring background levels of nitrate in the Florida aquifer were probably less than 0.05 milligrams per liter. Now we're seeing many springs exceeding 1 milligram per liter, and certainly even some exceeding much more than that, and this is absolutely the death of a spring. It turns the spring green, which you can see the greenish tint in our spring down there. Algal blooms take off, eutrophication, all the things that go along with nutrient enrichment. And where are those nutrients coming from? Well, humans, obviously. This is a pie chart showing at the time in 2002 where we thought the major sources of nitrate input, and it turns out our wastewater spray field, which is where we treat our municipal waste, was contributing a significant amount of nitrate to Wakulla Spring. And how did we figure that out? Well, we actually injected dye. Here's the spray field here. Each one of these little pinpoints is a place where we've injected dye. Florida Geological Survey actually drilled the wells through which some of that dye was injected and where it was detected. Here's some other injection points, and here are the places where the dye was detected, and ultimately it made its way to Wakulla Spring. Here's some other dye traces here. We've done them from the swales that drained the National Forest. So we have a pretty good idea where this stuff is coming from.
And is it fair to say that until this was done, the city of Tallahassee said there's no way our drainage goes due south?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. They had to have science to dictate to them that they were actually part of the problem. They couldn't fathom that, you know, they're pumping polluted water into our aquifer, but if it wasn't coming out of Wakulla Springs, it was okay. So we had to show them that, yes, it's coming out of Wakulla Springs. Oh, not to mention all the poor slobs that live between here and here who have to drink that nutrient-enriched water.
And can you just point out Natural Bridge site again?
This is where we are headed right here. Here's Natural Bridge, and we're going to go take a look at that. And once again, as I said, there are a number of springs that discharge here. And in fact, there's another system just over here further to the east called the Wasissa. So in this one little area, we have four first magnitude springs discharging an enormous quantity of water. So right here in our area, you're really in a unique hydrogeological area. Karst has really proceeded to the point where water moves incredibly rapidly through these systems. In fact, some of this dye has been tracked, you know, it can go miles in a day, and that's pretty significant. Can you imagine what would happen if some sort of tanker with whatever happens to fall over into one of these karst features, and if it moves that rapidly, I mean, there's no remediation, it's just going to devastate.
Have they mitigated any of the wastewater?
Yeah. From our work here, the city actually was denied a permit to continue to spray polluted effluent, and they had to clean up their act before the Department of Environmental Protection, which we actually work for, before they would grant them another permit. So they went from spraying water that was about 10 milligrams per liter, now they're going to treat it, now it's going to be about 3 milligrams per liter out of the nozzle.
Well, isn't there a problem with the farmer who was gathering the hay and adding to the hay?
Yeah. Turns out that the city of Tallahassee decided that they wanted to make a profit on their operation here. So they invited a farmer to come in and farm the land, and they charged him money to take use of the land, and of course he got treated wastewater that was full of nutrients.
For the hay.
Yeah. So after his first growing season, he didn't get the yield that he wanted, and he realized, I got to add fertilizer. So the whole idea behind this treatment facility was to get rid of the nutrients, not add more to it. So he's since been stopped. The city has now agreed to start treating their wastewater back to a more higher stringent, and we'll see what impact it has. Now, in the meantime, Florida has explosive growth. We've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people that are moving in here, and as I said, for the most part, this is a rural area down here south of Tallahassee. Everybody that moves in here moves in with a septic tank. So we've got thousands of septic systems in here discharging here, septic effluent. Anywho, I didn't mean to depress you. And with that, I'll take gladly any questions.
You mentioned that 100% of the drinking water in the state of Florida came from Florida aquifers. aquifer. I was wondering if anybody had ever calculated how many gallons a minute or something of vital water that people drink in Florida and what percentage of drinking water that might be?
Yes, we have. It's about 90% of Floridians get their drinking water out of aquifers, not just of Florida. The bottled water issue is a touchy issue in Florida because in Florida, groundwater belongs to the people of the state of Florida. So private companies have now come in and they're extracting our water and they're selling it at a huge profit and Floridians don't get any benefit out of it. But really it turns out that the overall amount of water they're pumping out is minuscule compared to the amount of water that is in our aquifer system now. You know, it's distasteful to see a company profit that significantly off of a state resource, and I don't like that. Some of them actually used to stick pipes directly into springs and suck water out of the spring vent. We have since taken care of that. We obviously don't want them doing that. But it is an incredibly small overall portion of groundwater that they pump out. Any other questions? And we can certainly talk more about this when we get to our field trip destinations. And thanks very much for your attention. Yes?
How much water is coming out of this spring?
It's highly variable, but on average about 350 cubic feet per second, which is what, maybe roughly 200 million gallons? 180 million gallons? Yeah.
All right.
Liter.
350
cubic feet per second.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that's 200 million gallons per day.
Roughly, about 200 million gallons a day, something like that. But once again, I'll give you this caveat. All of our springs in the state of Florida fluctuate wildly. Some of them discharge in excess of 1,200 cubic feet per second. And some of them are well called size are much less. In fact, sometimes some of these massive springs actually stop flowing and reverse flow. So you have to take all of that into consideration when you're looking at it. Really, an average is just based on what we've done and how many measurements. Spring Creek. Yeah, and during the dry seasons or an extended period of drought. Remember, we still haven't recovered. Our aquifer was incredibly impacted by all that. And even if you return to normal rainfall flow, you still have all that deficit to make up. So you really need above average rainfall to account for that. And meanwhile, Florida's still sticking more straws into the ground.
Thank you very much.